6 o'clock. This is the public safety meeting of the Yorkville City Council on Thursday, April 5th, 2018. Alderman Plocher, Alderman Tarulis, Alderman Funkhauser, myself are here, so we have a quorum. Are there any citizen comments? Please line up one at a time. Minutes for approval. Does anybody have any questions or changes to the meetings? Meeting is from January 4th, 2018. All right, all those in favor of approving the minutes as presented, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Minutes are approved. And without objection, if you guys don't have any objection, I would move to move number 5, Public Safety 2018-09. We'll get lost in discussion up to number 1 so we can give Ms. Chavez the courtesy of getting her out of here.
Thank you.
Sound good? All right.
So I can see everybody.
The floor is yours.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for inviting me today. We have been kind of in communication a couple of months now with Rich, and he suggested that we come and speak with you directly about what we're proposing and how we may be able to help Yorkville. I understand that I have sent over materials, and I don't know whether you guys have seen them. I sent them to the attorney, the city attorney, and it was kind of an extensive memorandum that laid forth, and I don't want to, you know, kind of over explain everything and go through the entire litigation that was laid out in that memorandum. If you've seen it, if not, there is some...
I have not. Have any of you seen it?
No.
Okay, so it's probably still in Kathy's hands.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so... essentially what has happened, and nationally, I'll try to put it in a quick nutshell. The opioid crisis, as you all know, has gotten a lot of media attention. And there are a number of lawsuits that have been filed in Illinois, some that have been filed by the state of Illinois, some by counties in Illinois. There's also litigation that's been filed by cities throughout the country. There's been cities, counties, fire departments, police departments. We represent all the Indian tribes in South Carolina on their claims because they have a distinct claim. So there are a number of different government entities, and you might say, why? Illinois is a very unique, and I was going to check the exact...
77, I believe.
7,700 or 7,500. They have an exceptionally high number of what we call local government units. And the way...
They have the most...
And I don't know if it's 7,500 or 7,700, but essentially what has happened is that because of the way organizationally America would pay for this type of crisis, it has required... all these different lawsuits. And I don't know if any of you saw the news today that Attorney General Jeff Sessions said that he is now petitioning to go to speak to the consolidated litigation where all these cases... So let me back up one step since you guys haven't seen the memorandum. All of the cases that were filed, or most of them, have been removed into federal court. And there's over 300 cases now that are pending before an Ohio judge. So back in November, the defendants wanted all of the various defendants. Some litigation has all the defendants. Some only have pharmaceutical companies. Some have, inclusive of supermarkets and chains and so forth. We focused our efforts on the pharmaceutical companies that manufactured and the largest three pharmaceutical distributors. There's three large ones that have 85% of the market and was responsible for making the decisions kind of where medicines would go or this particular type of medicine would go. Some people have looked at a little bit down the chain like a Walmart or other ones, but the law is more attenuated there. So when all these different cases get filed across the country, even though there's slightly different defendants and slightly different, some people add doctors or various things, which is not what we did, they nevertheless are common enough. They all involve the opioid manufacturing industry, the legitimate pharmaceutical industry's bad actions that started about 2 decades ago, where they made a decision to really aggressively market and campaign to increase the sale and increase the prescription rate of oxycodone and other types of analgesics. So I know, Rich, you've seen this in the Yorkville community where someone who's a good citizen, often high school students, etc., will start out with a minor injury, you know, maybe even just a tooth being pulled. And over the past number of years, the manufacturing companies did this aggressive marketing campaign to dentists, family practitioners, people who were more local, smaller towns where they thought that they didn't have specialized pain management clinics and things like that, and they would go and get them to prescribe it for everything. Oh, you know, this athlete broke his ankle, or, you know, sprained his ankle. Give him an opiate. And they were getting OxyContin and similar type medications for minor injuries, for dental problems, etc. So I actually have a chart, and I didn't know you didn't have my materials, but I have a chart in here. Maybe you can find it where it shows how the it literally went from under $1 billion a year in sales to over $13 billion. And this year estimated over $18 billion nationally. So, I mean, there it was just a tremendous spike. So what did they do?
So what time period? From when to when did it go from?
That $1 billion was in 1999, and 13 billion was...
2016. As they started. So what happened then is, over this period of time, as we saw more and more and more and more, maybe about 10 years ago, you might have heard of the OxyContin litigation that started, where, especially in areas like Appalachia, West Virginia, different areas that had problems, they were getting raided. And pharmacies started to say, wait a minute, we're getting broken into because people are desperate for these pills. That was kind of the first warning sign, but they didn't really start to see it until overdose deaths in the United States took over AIDS. It took over shootings and murders, and it became the leading cause of death. And the statistics, which I did include in the memo that I sent to you.
This is the one you wanted.
Yeah, I mean, you see it down here in 92 with this tiny little amount, and it just consistently went up. Well, overdose deaths did exactly the same thing, and they just started to skyrocket. So they started to study it and take a look at the rate of death. And they could mark it exactly with, as it was like a proportionate increase in deaths and overdoses. So, over the last several years, and this gives different, and I can make copies available for everybody if you want to see them, but they can show how the deaths went up, and most recently in the last year, it's been kind of going down. And people said, great, except that means they're saving people who are addicted. And the addicts don't recover the same way. They have found in the last couple of years their recovery process is not the same. And they're not really getting the success rates that they do on other types of addiction. It seems to be a lifelong process. It also seems to be medication-assisted in terms of how often... permanently for the rest of their life, where they're taking medication during the program, needing different kinds of supports in place, and finding that on average, the majority of people that responded to one call where there's been an overdose and they save them, they're coming back and responding to that same address, and they're having 2, 3, 4 overdoses at that same address with the same people over the period of time. Consequently, they're also noticing that there's an increase in crime rates that are related to this type of substance. And so people often will jump because the cost can be anywhere from $30 to $50 a pill, and people can be taking a lot of pills a day. They can't afford it, so they jump onto either the black market where they're buying pills on the black market, and it's, you know, that is an illegal process, or they jump to heroin. And, you know, it's a cheaper, heroin's cheaper, and unfortunately with the fentanyl and other things that are contaminating it, making it increasingly difficult for law enforcement because they have to have new training all the time, how to handle a white powdery substance, how to do, you know, how to appropriately, because fentanyl is very different. They've had incidents where if you touch that substance thinking it's something else, even with gloves, apparently, the wrong type of gloves, I guess, you can have...
It can absorb and you
right,
die.
Right.
I mean, literally, for small amounts.
So, the
you
problem...
You were not privy to this, but Rich came out and said that that it was very little time that we... that because
I don't... Okay, so I'll
so
try...
This is what
I'm trying to condense it, and that's why the memo we gave you was quite long. So here's where... Here's what...
well, if Kathy has it, we'll get it and read it. I mean, eventually...
Great. So you can...
We,
and you
we can
take
get
a,
that from Kathy. Yep.
A better look at kind of where things are at. I did provide it to her, and there's been some updates that would be since when I last gave it to her because the litigation every day new things. Today, the Attorney General announced he is going to be going to get the national federal Attorney General, asked if he can get involved in the settlement negotiations that have started in the national case.
There's been three settlement conferences already on this.
And so here, so all the national cases got consolidated before a judge in Ohio. Usually consolidated litigation that's this messy, this many defendants, this many different municipalities, local government units of all different types and sizes. New York has filed, Chicago has filed, you know, you name it, they've filed all over the place. We're talking a 5-year process, a 10-year process. I'm starting a trial next week in a case that has been on file for 12 years. And so we are, usually it's a much bigger, longer time. This judge came on the bench on January 9th, the first conference he had, and said to everybody in the room, this is an epidemic in our country. Over 100 people are dying a day. There are a lot of smart people in this room. This is going to get solved if I have anything to do about it this year. I want settlement conferences before there's even discovery in the case. He's getting, because there's a lot of data that they already have in terms
and
of
a lot of the
needs.
Cities don't have the ability, the money set aside for this type of thing, so he wants to, like, alleviate that issue. With NARC, I mean, you were saying the increase has been every city tremendous with using NARCM to...
So that judge has started the process of settlement discussions. And the drug companies, while denying it was their fault, of course, at this point, said, we do want to be part of the solution. So the settlement discussions are underway. The federal government announced today that they've asked to speak to the court and become a friend of the court, in the process of settling this. One of the things that they want to make sure is that any federal laws that are available to the states and municipalities that could bolster your local claims could be utilized. And they also want to part out crafting the solution. The Surgeon General today came out and said, and for the first time since 2005, and this is something that won't be in the materials because it happened today, the Surgeon General has not issued this type of a warning or recommendation since 2005 when they did a recommendation against pregnancy and alcohol, not drinking while pregnant. They said more Americans should be carrying, regular citizens, the antidote for a heroin overdose. That we should know how to administer it on the streets. Me personally, stunningly, I had to, just yesterday, coming home from California, a man was getting on the plane behind me who was on heroin, I think. I mean, he appeared to be in every way, and he was not able to stand up, etc. And I was part of saying to the flight attendant looked at me and said, do you think he can board? I don't think so. I think you need to get medical. And they had to bring them there, and he was right there in front of me, and I've never seen that before. So it's happening more often, and they're saying regular citizens should have this on them, access to it, and know how to use it, which I don't know how to use it. I don't have it on me, I don't know how to use it. So when the Surgeon General has not issued a recommendation since 2005, and the last one that was something as serious as don't drink while pregnant, and the next one that comes out is carry
NARCAM
on you, which no, that's a generic form, carry it on you, it shows you how this problem is becoming, it's a significant, it's affecting every community, large and small. So where is Yorkville?
Yes.
Okay. So what we had talked to Rich about is that most of the efforts nationally have been individual and for particular cities because they're big enough to stand alone. Chicago's big enough to stand alone. Their damages are millions and millions and millions and tens of millions of dollars. And they have their own regulations and ordinances which are helpful and very positive in Chicago. I work with the Council for Chicago very closely. New York, the same thing. Many of the counties, we represent some in Portland, in the Oregon area, that have a different type of county structure and are much bigger. So people have, the lawyers that do this for a living and repeatedly go in front of the MDLs, multi-district litigation, class action, complex civil litigation, most of them have gone out and done only individual cases. When I spoke to Rich and via Greg Ingemanson, who's a good friend of ours as well, or I've known him, I think I've known him as long as I've known you, Carlo, just about the same time frame. We all kind of came out to practice at the same time of law school. What I suggested to him is I said, there are many government units in Illinois that are just too small to hire lawyers. They're not of interest. Little towns, St. Charles is another, would be an example, or, Sandwich, or many of the southern Illinois smaller municipalities, and especially in Illinois, where local government units that have to pay their own tabs, so have to pay for their own training, pay for their own citizens to have enough access, pay for medication-assisted programs, et cetera, will likely get overlooked because they don't have a seat at the table. The big ones do. Chicago does, many of the counties have banded together. So Yorkville will have some benefit if this gets resolved from the fact that I think you have three or four different counties that Yorkville.
No, we're just in one county. We're just in Kendall.
Oh, you're just in Kendall County. Yeah. Okay, so Kendall will get less. Just like we had on that map, the Kendall already is not receiving the same kind of resources in Illinois in terms of medication-assisted therapies and programs and funds and grants that the rest of them do. And I had shown Rich a map on that
the first day. More the power counties and that up there, federal program type situation.
Right. And so what we're looking at doing is to have Yorkville be a representative for other local government units as well as itself, file the same type of claim, but say we are speaking as the voice of other Illinois local government units that are not filed, that are not big enough to file, to make sure that when this case gets settled, enough of the resources come to us in the form that we need them. So that you're not just giving it to a county for their county health department, but that doesn't trickle down to us at the police department and at our level of what we need. Because without having that kind of voice, very, very likely there will be only funds that are set up that will be things that you can maybe write a grant request for and go through that entire process like you would for something else. But because you don't have your own lawsuit, there's nothing to sell. So we had proposed, and in the memorandum that I gave to the city attorney, we had proposed doing one of a number of different types of representation. One would be to represent Yorkville and other municipalities, villages, townships that are of similar size. So to say, we speak on behalf of similar size, us, our size, or smaller. Another one would be to say just anyone who didn't, any other similar government entity that didn't file. So if you happen to be a little bit bigger than us, but you also didn't file, we're speaking on behalf. What's the advantage to you? The advantage to you is that you have bargaining power. If you come to the table as one small, tiny town, you will have a tiny piece of the pie. You'll get something, but it'll be a tiny piece of the pie. If you come and say, And Illinois has positive law on letting you be representative. Some states do not allow municipalities or local government units to have a what they call a class, where you represent everybody, all the rest of them that are similarly situated. Illinois does allow it. So if you come and say, Chicago filed, but really not very many other cities in Illinois have filed, we filed and we represent all, we're speaking on behalf of everyone, and you need to settle for all of the local government units. And you know that's something that we would have to discuss and decide with you guys whether we want to include in that definition just municipalities, if you want to also do fire districts and things like that that have their costs. But you'd be coming to the table and essentially capturing and saying, we want to be the voice. And I think Rich would be a fabulous spokesperson for that, because although he hasn't said anything in my presentation, when he and I discussed it, he has some really good anecdotal information about how this individually affects the citizens in Yorkville, how he has seen this, not just in Yorkville, but in other areas around here, everything from professional people who've been impacted to, like I said, you know, kids, people overdosing who really should not have ever been started and never would have gone to an illegal substance or overdosed had it not been prescribed to them initially by a doctor who had been given misinformation. So to give you an idea, the complaints that are filed in this case are over 250-page complaints. They are extensive. And I've tried to give you in a quick nutshell, and I know I'm speaking fast to kind of all over the board. There is a memorandum that's out there. We would be willing to do it on a contingency basis, especially if we're going to do it in a way that we represent the other, we do it as kind of a class. By doing it that way, we have to get court approval of our fees anyway, so we keep track of our time, and usually that never comes out of the client's pocket. What I mean by the client's pocket, it never comes out of your pocket if we don't recover. So this is not something that we're coming to you to say, would you fund this venture for us, be the do-gooders and do this. We will fund it, and we will pay the expenses, and if we recover something, if for some reason we only recover for Yorkville, we would take a percentage or work something out with you guys in terms of figuring that out. If we recover for the group, all of our fees would have to necessarily be approved by the court and paid separately. So it doesn't come out of any, and that's the other advantage of a class action, is that, it always has to be paid separate and apart. And in fact, when we negotiate class actions, contrary to a lot of myths on some of the, because there are some bad stories.
You will not get a coupon.
You won't get a coupon. You're not going to get a coupon for a, reduced price of OxyContin. But in this particular situation, there would be, though, I'm guessing there will be non-monetary relief that comes as well. It may be that they agree to send a certain amount of, some training that they provide, that's provided by some third party, or free the drug that you administer, the Narcan. Maybe they provide free Narcan. And those things we would certainly not be in any way taking a contingent fee out of. Anything that we would do as a contingent fee, we typically do for, we represent a lot of states in litigation nationally, and we typically do them on a 20 to 25% contingency, one of those two. So I would be, willing to do it here, especially since we're from this area, at the 20%. And we include a provision that says we will pay advance all costs. If we don't win, we will never come after you for a bill. And if it's done as a class action or as part of the MDL, we submit our time to the judge and ask for approval and payment separate and apart from what you guys receive here. So part of my interest was piqued because Greg and were just talking with us about it, and he said, talk to Rich. And I think we talked back in January. So it's been a little while since we've talked. And a lot has been happening, and you see a lot in the national news. It's a local area. I think that there are tons of small cities that will not get attention, and you'll have to apply for grants to get your information and your things. And I think you could be a leader in Illinois in terms of saying, make sure we get what we need. And Rich is in a position to actually speak to that and, you know, to very articulately tell them what a city or an area like this, a police department, would need. So that's as quickly as I can to digest 300 lawsuits and, you know, the MDL. I can give you specific information on any one.
Or if you guys have any questions right now that you want to answer, I know that everybody is in a hurry to for us to finish, but to also get the meeting going. So if there's any questions.
Is there anything I can help answer or...
I guess I have a question. I'm trying to figure out what's the end thing we're trying to get at here. Are we blaming the pharmaceutical company for the problem and trying to get them to pick up the costs of dealing?
Part of it, yeah. And let me tell you why. Because they, and this is detailed in those allegations, years and years of investigation and litigation, and then they violated a bunch of... certain states like South Carolina put in place, this is why we have a lot of the origination down there, they put in place when they had the OxyContin problems, direct statements to them of what they couldn't do in terms of marketing this medication. And they violated it. And they've got all the evidence.
I mean,
the
bottom line, what they did, it was to... to distribute this drug throughout the United States, and also it was with intent because they knew this was highly addictive. They said there was only 1% of the population would get addicted. It was not true. For all of the drugs that are sold, the U.S. is, I think, 5% total population of the world population. And it actually consumes 85% of the opiates.
Yeah, and there's a lot of information. If you want to see more on exactly what the drug companies did, if you go on the Department of Justice website, or on the Secretary of Health's website, Illinois has an opiate crisis plan. There's a lot of information out there, but essentially what they are saying is that the pharmaceutical companies and the distributors misled doctors. They did things like tell them that people would become addicted if they were on it for months, but in reality they became addicted in 5 days, 3 to 5 days. They told them that they distributed, and this is a big one in some of our rural areas where we're representing people in other states, they distributed in, dumped them in small towns where they knew that there was no pain population. They knew there weren't even enough people there. And they were, and what the argument is, and some of the pressure on the FDA is, they said they were supposed to report suspicious orders from pharmacies. When a pharmacy in a tiny little town with a population of 1,000 people is ordering enough for downtown Chicago, and I mean not downtown Chicago, but Aurora, you know there's no pain population there. You know those prescriptions are being diverted. And that's exactly what was happening. They were writing huge amounts. The pills were available in the local town, and people would drive out from Chicago. It's the first time ever that instead of people seeing people drive into Chicago to buy their drugs, Chicago was driving out to places like LaSalle and purchasing, and they were only getting those made available because some of these prescription monitoring programs weren't available out in the small counties, in the small towns. And they got local doctors who would write these scripts and get them into the pharmacy, and then the pharmaceutical companies would supply, or the pharmaceutical distributors, supply these tiny pharmacies.
But just seems all I ever hear is pharmacies are responsible, but I never hear, you know, exactly why are they responsible.
Yeah, I mean, I think so I'd like to read that memo that has the allegations as to what they did.
Yeah. You answered my question.
I'm going to forward to you one of the more recent complaints that have been filed, maybe New York's complaint, because it really sets forth these allegations. And it's stunning. It's actually very disturbing because you don't know until you start to look at the maps and go, oh my gosh, 1,000 people were in that town and they were prescribing enough for every person to in the entire town to have like a 20-year supply of pain pills. And so, you know, those were some of the facts that the feds... and. The other thing I can tell you, there are many cases where people go, oh, I'm not quite sure, should they really be held responsible? In this case, it's pretty much hands down the federal government, the state governments, the counties, et cetera. So what we're kind of proposing is a creative method or way to try to make sure that resources get here. You know, you sure. to Yorkville and other cities like Yorkville, so that you can use it for not just training, but training of police officers, equipping people, equipping citizens, giving them information, and then also possibly even things like rehabilitation programs or making sure that you have access to very specific types of resources or medication-assisted programs. So that's... I will send you guys the complaint. The only thing I would like to kind of emphasize, we were here in January. Settlement negotiations are underway. I am... The panel that is negotiating right now are about 10 attorneys, all of which I work with on a regular basis, all of which are a little bit older than I am in terms of their seniority. They picked the best top, most senior negotiating team. I have a good relationship with them. We can get a spot at the table, but if it gets settled before we have a spot at the table, they're not going to include me. I mean, it's something that we kind of need to make a decision relatively shortly. And if we don't recover anything special for you, you won't get a bill. And if we do, so we kind of want to let you know that, you know, it's kind of almost a zero sum in that way situation. But I would hate to have them reach that settlement in 2-3 weeks and or a month, and then you know, you guys call me and say, hey, we got the memo, we love it, we want to do it. And I'm sorry, I can't. So. That's about it.
Any other questions?
And I'm sorry for the very quick talking. I wasn't actually sure today if it was going forward because I was out of town last week when Rich told me, and then I didn't know if my messages didn't come through because I was out of the country. And so I apologize for kind of being quick. And
I appreciate it.
So
you do look around here.
Thank you.
See you later. Bye-bye.
All right. So, I mean, I think for that, unless you guys want to discuss it now, I'd like to see the memo that they wrote with, you know, whatever.
Yeah, like
you know, empirical
memo.
Data
yeah.
that they
Here.
Have. Though.
New York, I'm not as interested in. I'm more interested in what the data is here.
Right.
I didn't know there was a memo. I had her talk to Kathy directly after my conversation with them. So I kind of pushed them off to Kathy. And
it's not on you.
Yeah. I feel bad because I'm like, man, if I'd have known there was a memo, I would have put it in the packet.
No.
And I know Bart would have caught it.
If I would have known the lottery numbers for next week, I'd play them. I mean, you don't know. All right. Well, yeah, I mean, I think obviously if there's some legitimate things that the companies have done, maybe we look at it, but if it's just, you know, a shotgun approach, just looking for a quick payday, you know, that's not really kind of the way we are in Yorkville.
Right.
But if there's something legitimate that can be causally connected to problems we have in Yorkville, maybe we consider it. So let's look at the memo and figure out what we want to do.
Yeah.
Is that all right with everybody?
Yeah.
Can we get a request into Kathy, which I'm sure you've probably already written down? But,
it's probably
you know,
already signed.
It's probably already signed.
No, not this time.
Okay, press send.
Processing, yes.
Yeah, but we would like to see that, so. All right, so unless anybody has anything else, let's just move on and get the rest of the stuff, which should be pretty quick, out of the way. And public safety, number one, 2018-05, police reports for November to March. Obviously, I had an opportunity to look at the data. Anybody have any questions about any of the numbers or anything that piqued your interest?
That's interesting.
I can tell you the last few months have been very predictable. we don't have any big outliers, which is incredible. We have, as of recent, had a few car burglaries again, but it's unlocked vehicles. We actually, one of our patrolmen is going to be put in for an award. Not this council meeting, but the next one for catching them. The guy admitted to several of ours and some in the county's jurisdiction. And so I mean,
did they get the gun back?
The gun has not been recovered yet.
God damn. How stupid can you be?
Yeah.
Well, you left a gun in a locked vehicle?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we did have an armed robbery that occurred at the at the Smokey's restaurant.
Well,
in the parking lot?
Yeah, in the parking lot. Yeah. It wasn't in the restaurant.
Right, right. It was an individual.
Yeah, it was somebody buying something off the internet.
Well, you know, for the record, we'll leave it at that. But it did actually turn out because the individual who's been charged with that crime now happened to post this on his social media. But the gun that was used was actually stolen on Colonial Parkway. And the gun had since been stolen from that individual from when we
it's been stolen twice
figured it out. So it's been stolen twice, allegedly. But by another gang member. And but anyways, that was one of our outliers, and that was legitimate, where somebody was actually robbed by gunpoint.
And now that the weather's going to start warming up, we're going to start getting those calls.
Yeah.
You know, our if you've been following the local news, SPY,
I know.
Several of our Yorkville residents have been arrested in Aurora, and gun violations have been involved in shootings in Aurora. It's all around us. We are trying to be very vigilant to stay on top of these issues. That criminal intelligence team that we started a few years back has been extremely instrumental in this area and helping the county and the Oswego with their shootings and with us to stay on top of these things, and hopefully we can minimize it.
Good. We're not immune, that's for sure.
We are not.
All right. Any other questions on the reports? All right. Public safety number two, public safety 2018-6, the adjudication reports from January to March. And I did want to, from the previous ones, I did read all the attaboy letters. I always like seeing those.
Yeah.
So that's good. Like they were doing the ride-alongs and working with the college and doing all that. So that's great to see.
We actually had an incident with one of those where the kid didn't do the ride-along or something, right?
What?
But he reported he did.
That was last fall.
Yeah, the kid got in some trouble with the school.
Whoops.
Yeah, he made up his whole... fictionalized this whole ride-along program for a grade.
He wouldn't get caught.
Well, he wrote the narrative saying that he, you know, knocked down the door and breached an entrance into a house. I think the teacher might have caught on.
Yeah, it was very obvious. It was very obvious. I got a call from the school about it. I'm like, we don't have any records of that individual riding along.
One of these things, not like the other.
As I threw the flash grenade into the building.
Right.
My heart was racing. All right, so let's get down to the two things we need to actually work on and vote on. Public safety number 2018-08. First is the license, 07. First is the catering amendment.
Yeah, so there's two parts here. One would allow people who have a catering license, i.e. Cobblestone 1836 Pizza Riot, in the downtown B2 business district to not only be able to serve liquor from the restaurant, at like a music event, but now also a movie event too. So they're talking about bringing some chairs in there, doing like a brew and view type event, and we saw that as similar in scope to music. And then the second component of that is just erasing everything having to do with Meadowhawk Lodge, which was the Hoover Forest Preserve Lodge, which is now de-annexed.
Go ahead.
The showing of the movie theater, that is specifically to the one. Because obviously our theater up north, that is actually PUD, so that's has an zoning, but that would not be...
You have to qualify as a caterer, so you have to be off-site, so they wouldn't qualify there. Then also you have to have a full A1 liquor license in a B2 business district. That one might actually be in a B2, but they don't have a full A1. So
if somebody came in, if somebody had to...
An A1 liquor license in a B2 business district, they could take it.
Right, so
under a catering license.
So, yeah, if a caterer came in and they applied, they received the A1, and they were able to, they could go into NCG and provide that service.
Yeah, they would have to be a catering operation in NCG.
It would be a very, you know, challenging way for them to go about doing that because of who's to get through to do that. But they, in theory, could... as a caterer, start selling in a theater.
Yeah,
because it's a ticketed event. It's qualified as a ticketed event. That's why I say selling.
Yes.
What do you do?
I mean, if that was your concern, you can make it in a theater with a seating capacity of less than 100 or something like that. Is that really a concern that they're going to start selling liquor up in NCG?
If they were going to sell, I would think that we would have representatives here asking to do that. I don't want it to be explicitly allowed there without coming back for consent. So if we put a limit on it, I'm okay. If they want it there at NCG, I want them to come and ask for it. I don't want it to be inadvertently allowed.
I don't think it would fit. Even though it's ticketed, it's a different...
But, I mean, the zoning's there. It's a PUD, but underlines...
What if hypothetically, if I start Carlos Catering, right?
Yeah.
And I apply for an A1 liquor license to the city for my catering business.
So you have to have an open A1 license. Right. So that's full bar retail.
Right. Okay. And then I go to NCG and say, hey, I'm a caterer. I have a license. I'll set up shop.
You'd have to file building permits, health code. You'd have to have a full, kitchen in order to qualify under that type of a thing. Hmm. And then go.
Okay.
Right, because you'd have to have a catering
business run out of NCG.
Right.
No, you wouldn't.
No, not necessarily.
No, you wouldn't.
I would have it out of. I could have it out of another building and literally.
Right.
That's a cater it to the
NCG.
You can take it to any venue showing a movie in a theater, because your catering facility is not necessarily a facility that you're.
Right. So it's catering.
Exactly.
You're taking it.
Right. And see why I think that there could be an inadvertent allowance of that at NCG. It'd be very extreme to see that happen.
It would be extreme, and I don't think that it would fit under the definition of catering business. So if Carlos Catering moved in, they would have to be actually catering in the theater. They couldn't just cater somewhere in the city and then go to the theater.
But isn't that the intent of catering, that you cater events?
No, there's two different types of catering licenses.
Is that how this is written?
This is basically like a home, a catering business that is based in the area. Yeah, so because you can get a catering license, like for a wedding venue, for Meadowhawk Lodge. That was, somebody has a catering license in their other town. They come to here and they don't need an additional catering license, or it's like $25 or something per day or something like that.
How in here does this differentiate the two types of catering then? Because as I'm reading it, it just says a catering business with its license location.
So I guess my suggestion would be then to just cap it at 100 if we're concerned about that.
Hey, just do a seating capacity of 100 for the theater.
That's probably the simplest way.
So really, one theater qualifies in Yorkville.
Exactly.
River's Edge. I mean, that's not more than 100 in there, right? I mean, that thing is tiny.
Can we find out how many it is?
Find out what it is, and then go to the next 100.
I never won.
If it's 101, you say 200 business.
Yeah.
Whatever it is. I don't know what their capacity is.
I mean, I've been in there.
Their seating is different than what standing room capacity.
Right.
I've seen probably almost 200 people in there.
Standing room. Right.
Now, was that legal?
Well.
Ask Mike Torrance.
How much does one of the theaters at NCG sit? I mean, those are huge.
Some of them would be more than 100. Some of them would be less than 100.
So, I mean, the thing is then do you... I mean, you can cap it off, and then they could rope you in, and you could come in the side, and yes, you could still do it. But I think if you're going to go through all those hoops, God bless you, serve alcohol in the NCG theater.
Right.
It's like a pot of gold.
Right.
I don't care about me, too.
If you want to spend all that money, I'll buy a beer,
I agree. I'll buy an $8 beer.
Right.
They would have to outfit it to have little tables flip up, and there would have to be a rebuild in there.
Right.
This agenda item is on the mayor's report for Tuesday. So before Tuesday, I will ask Kathy to make sure that what's drafted would not allow the NCG theater to move a caterer in and then do it under the
without extensive money involvement.
Right. Well, the reason it was put out for the 10th and not the 24th was that we want to get pizza right up and running.
Yeah.
So we wanted to get them their license as quickly as possible.
So they can shut down that too.
Actually, frankly, out of the two businesses, a kind of high-end $30 a plate restaurant and a pizza place with arcades.
Yeah,
I'm going to the pizza place with arcades
Granted,
20 times more often than I'm going to a $30 a plate restaurant in Yorkville. I think it's a much better business model.
It's a better idea. I'll give you that.
I mean, I drive my kids out to Luigi's. Aurora. Mm-hmm. I know many Luigi's here.
If they're playing a good movie, I'll probably go buy a beer and watch it.
Right, why not?
I'll walk home. Not to worry.
Okay.
So on the agenda, it is as is, but we can discuss it with Kathy, and we can always do a motion from the floor to amend at that point if you want to.
If I had to guess, she'll probably just give us the justification for why that wouldn't fit. But
and
we'll ask one way or another.
Yeah, and I mean, if she can do that in advance, that would be good. You know, if she's able to do that before Tuesday.
Right.
Okay.
All right, so it's going to be on the mayor's report, because we have to get it on the agenda. And then we'll move on to PS 2018-08, the license fee deposits. We've discussed these before. Now they've been codified into writing. They are asking to get rid of the actual deposit. In speaking with the clerk's office and with Bart, it seems that it's an administrative, more of an administrative burden on us. And now with the firmed up fees, I don't think we're going to have issues where people pay the $100, take the application, then we're sitting around waiting for it and it never shows up. So I think with a $350 fee.
All right.
It's going to be much more likely than people who pull the application and pay the application fee are going to come back and get their license.
Right.
And we obviously now have the layered penalties for renewals, which will hopefully get, you know, so we'll take care of it on the front end with the initial application and on the back end with the $750 fine. Hopefully that will induce people to do it on time.
Yeah. Right.
So, anybody have any objections or questions on
the
this
I'm okay with reducing or removing that.
Okay. All right. So that's it for that. Any old business? Anything going on in our community that we should know about? All right. Any additional business? Meeting adjourned.